Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Music Business Podcast presented by Hypebot.com. I'm your host, Kyle Blinn. Today on this show, we're talking with Bill Wilson, who is the VP of Digital Strategy and Business Development at the Music Business Association. We're going to talk to Bill about the state of metadata in the music business and why it's so important today. Make sure that you subscribe to Music Business Podcast in iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can also follow the show and get the latest updates on SoundCloud. And if you like the show, I would love for you to rate us highly and submit a review in iTunes. Here is Courtney Harding's interview with Bill Wilson.
So first of all, give us an update on the work that Music Business has been doing with metadata. And it's specifically, like, how is the buy-in in terms of, you know, labels and other parties really joining your efforts?
The Music Business Association is a 50-year-old organization. It was originally intended to be a retail organization. Obviously, there was no digital component that long ago. And when I was brought in about 6 years ago, there were only about a dozen people around the table talking about these issues. And over the course of the year, there has been a huge increase in the number of people who've, you know, come to the table. So right now we have, you know, all of the major labels, virtually every music service, managers, groups from ranging from the RIAA to standards organizations like DDEX and ISNI, all participating in our breakout work groups and really see us as the umbrella for all of these discussions in the U.S. Our event, Music Biz, we had over 200 people at our metadata summit. That's now 3 years old that I started about 3 years ago. We had an overcapacity working group session where we talked about some of the initiatives that we're working on for the year. And we had an overcapacity artist information center with Kristen Thompson, Brian Calhoun, and Allison Booth, which really was talking about to, you know, sort of emerging artists and managers who know nothing about this, kind of the basics of metadata. And, you know, all were fantastically received. So we've definitely become sort of the, if there is an organization that has become kind of the glue, that has been kind of the primary town crier on these issues, it's kind of been us. And in addition, we have some of these other work products that we have on the metadata side, including the style guide, the metadata style guide, which is kind of the Bible of how information needs to be conveyed, the underlying information needs to be conveyed within the field sets to the DSPs from the suppliers.
So, you know, as you sort of dig more into this, is there any way that you think you can estimate how much money artists and labels are using, are losing because their data is incorrect? Like, is that something that is, you know, hugely problematic right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's hugely problematic, but some of the problem is that no one company wants to stand out there and be outed in a highly competitive business for outing their specific numbers. There has been a study done in a corollary business. So Nielsen, I think in 2012 or 2013, actually published a book study. And if you Google Nielsen book link between metadata and sales, you can actually find the report. But the study essentially showed that there was a sample of books, which they took a sales sample of, and then they applied the correct metadata in 11 fields to this set of books and saw an average increase in sales of over 268% year over year, right? So that's a pretty decent increase in sales. I mean, that's not just saying, you know, 0.01% or 0.02%. You know, books saw a demonstrable exponential increase in sales because proper metadata was included. And, you know, the average person can actually anecdotally look at these problems with respect to metadata. I mean, you probably have been frustrated with the way that data appears on services. I know I run into this every day. Different name spellings, different configurations for the same artist or the same name for a different artist. You know, all of these things cause problems when somebody goes to click or what they're going to find or creates kind of that mental shopping cart abandonment when somebody's not sure what they're getting. And, you know, when I want to find a discography and listen to the first album, poor metadata, you know, from upstream, from the retailers, makes it a bad search experience because sometimes the field set doesn't include, for example, the original release date. It's only the release date for that version of the product. So in some cases, an album like, you know, Led Zeppelin 4 could have a 2015 release date, you know, and that seems to be kind of the disconnect between well-managed metadata that is the underlying requirement for all these discovery algorithms and bad data, which just causes customer frustration. And I'm sure, you know, everybody who's listening has had, you know, a zillion problems that are caused by metadata.
Yeah, I mean, I've had that definitely using the sort of traditional streaming services or even, you know, like the SoundClouds and the YouTubes of the world where you really don't know what you're getting. And if you're looking for something that's more obscure, you have to really dig and you never know. It's, you're going to get a list that's, you know, covers. And the thing that I get in Spotify a lot is karaoke versions of a song. So I'll get, you know, I mean, the sort of famous one is like you search for Taylor Swift and you get Taylor Swift karaoke. And if you're someone like us who knows the whole situation, then you sort of recognize that. But if you're an average user that doesn't pay attention to that stuff, then that's going to be a really bad user experience. But the other thing that I think is a bad user experience is how siloed everything is. So, you know, I bought the Kim Gordon book on Amazon last winter, and every other recommendation I got was, here's another book by a musician. You know, Amazon wasn't recommending Sonic Youth albums or Sonic Youth t-shirts or X-Girl or anything like that. And, you know, to me, that just seemed like the silliest thing ever. But again, like, not only are you dealing with a lot of bad metadata, it's also really just siloed, right? Like, is there any way to make it not only better, but also more sort of cross-platform?
Well, you know, that comes down to the recommendation engine of the retailer. But we, you know, we really are still in the infancy of recommendation. Like, if you look, you know, the music genome, for example, still isn't perfect. Collaborative filtering from plays offers a mediocre, you know, experience usually overall, at least for me, because I have a rather broad taste, right? When it looks at, you know, say, you know, my predominant genre of choice is all things rock, you know, ranging from old punk to sort of, you know, classic metal into kind of new stuff like Royal Blood, you know, maybe once or twice there'll be sort of a pop hit thrown in there. But all of a sudden, you know, it's kind of like you get Jesse J bang bang once, and then all of a sudden your entire music experience is changing because of one listen. So the weighting of what happens in those engines, even just for Music Excel itself, is still kind of, it's still in its nascent stages. And then as you look kind of to have the different types of experiences cross over, the underpinning of all of this is quality and robust data, which is not actually supplied about music. And don't forget also, the music industry doesn't care about selling books. The book industry doesn't care about selling that. So it's up to the job of the retailers to look at the individual components of that metadata, evaluate kind of the ontology of music and the ontology of books and see where they cross over and do some analysis on how AI can actually, you know, make accurate and better recommendations. But is the juice worth the squeeze for them when it comes to making that investment, especially when they're having to spend so much time and so much money fixing just the cornerstone metadata problems that happen, again, upstream from them? Right, there's so much expense in throwing people at solving the issue of artist disambiguation, which I talked about earlier, which is artists with the same name or different artists with the same name, that there leaves very little room in the development schedule and the priority list for dealing with things that would actually enhance the customer experience. So if there was better metadata from the start and people would enforce that, then there would be more time for the retailers to create better experiences. Right now, they're kind of working with spit and bubblegum to try to create the best that they can with what they're given under the circumstances that they have.
Well, yeah. So I feel like, you know, a lot of labels probably in the last couple of years and certainly going forward are going to really pay more attention to metadata and try to do a better job. But they have catalogs going back, you know, 40, 50 years. And, you know, are there efforts that you know of being made to go back to the catalogs, update data for old artists, and then how deep into the catalogs does it make sense to go? You know, if you're updating Led Zeppelin, then that's probably worth it. If it's some random band that put out two CDs in the mid-80s that 20 people bought, you know, is it worth sort of, how do you run the cost benefit analysis to be like, well, maybe this will get more plays, but maybe it won't? Like how are labels handling that?
Well, I mean, if you look again at the uptick from that book evidence, and right, there's correlation between the book metadata. You know, some people are skeptical of actual causation, but I choose to believe that that's the case. There's obviously a correlation in better metadata yielding better sales. So the question is, you know, if we're going to do quality, and you know, organizations like iTunes have been actually doing this, right? They've gone back in their own catalog and managed it themselves. So they've already done a lot of the heavy lifting on eliminating a lot of the chaff from their service. I'm calling them out as being a good actor here, right? They've done it themselves for their own particular service. But on the label side, you know, they don't necessarily take, you know, that's a competitive advantage for a company like Apple, is to have that distillation process in-house. The labels and the folks that supply the content, you know, they're running under very tight margins, right? Their staff is shrinking by the day. Everybody's looking to make more money. So again, the juice has to be worth the squeeze. I'm going to keep saying that over and over again. So the best place to start is really doing it right from the start. Everybody should pick a day where everything after this point is going to be done and done well, right? We don't have to do it the same old way today as we did yesterday, because it's just the same way. And there are companies who are addressing those kinds of issues with modernizing their supply chain. But for big labels, you know, to go back, like you said, it's millions of tracks. But what they do is segment by segment, they can go back and they can go do that. You know, and if for an indie label like my size, I ran an indie label for a number of years in the early 90s. You know, I have about 100 records that I could go and I could clean up or add additional context to, and it would take a few days, and I would probably see an incremental uptick. And that's, you know, one guy working part-time in the evenings, and that's not really, you know, a stress on operational infrastructure from my side. But, you know, for big companies, that's a lot of stuff. And I'll give you an example. There's a major label who is looking to package and deliver their promo photos, for example. All of the underlying contextual information that they wouldn't be otherwise have supplied to retailers. The thing is that the major label in question doesn't have any analysis of any of the photographs in any structured data format. So individual people are now going back to look at hundreds and hundreds of documents, if not thousands of documents, to get the rights that they own in each photograph. Because in some photographs, they only own the rights to use it on an album. In some photographs, they only own the rights to use it for promotion. They can't monetize it. So these are the kinds of things and infrastructure problems that we're running into right now, because there's opportunity out there that sadly we are woefully underprepared for. So is there a financial benefit? Yes, we think so, based on, again, what I told you about the Nielsen study, but not necessarily sure right now that anyone is really willing to make a lot of those investments. And that's the sad part of it. The good thing is that companies like Apple are.
Well, and I'm assuming right now we're talking mostly about Western music companies. So, you know, companies in the US, Canada, Western Europe, you know, that have more developed markets. I mean, you know, I've been looking a lot at sort of more global music stuff. And I mean, if you think data's a mess in the US, like, you go to Africa, like, go, you know, I mean, how do we get this fixed on a more global level? Because if we think the US is bad, I mean, it's probably a lot worse other places. And as a lot of those other places start to really come online and artists start to break out of those other territories, then there's a whole other problem.
Right. Well, I mean, Spotify is available in almost 60 markets right now, you know, and that's key, because all of the individual underlying labels have to conform to Spotify's rigid standards of metadata, which includes DDEX compliance. So the currencies of that, the underlying identifiers, ISRC, you know, and accurate, you know, using of the field set for the different data they have to provide is essential for anybody who wants to do business with Spotify. So, you know, I think that the leaders, and because there's actually almost an advantage for emerging markets in some ways, because they don't have a, you know, 15-year history of doing it the wrong way or an obtuse way, right? They are actually jumping into a time when standards have been set, companies are using standard supply chain. So if they want to, and they're listening, they can actually adapt to the workflow that's going on already in the business that's been kind of, you know, battle tested by, you know, the Western world for a while. You know, they see where this stuff breaks and where this stuff isn't. And we've had enough failures at this point to where, you know, we've set ourselves up, you know, as an industry to actually have a decent supply chain. It needs more work. And that's why we have the work groups under the organization. And that's why organizations like DDEX exist, why, you know, IFPI and RAAA concentrate on ISRC. That's why we all exist, is to build a global ecosystem. Because essentially, it should be as easy to exchange information about music globally as it is for me to walk up to an ATM in Boston and get $50 out, or go to Singapore and be able to stick that same ATM card in and get money out. You know, and that interoperability is key. So I think that if people are looking to become global players and they want their music everywhere, there are resources available for the emerging markets that they can get on the grid if they want to get on the grid.
Now, I mean, you mentioned Spotify and you've talked about Apple, but what about services like SoundCloud? You know, I mean, that just seems like every time I search SoundCloud, it's a complete mess and I don't know what I'm getting.
UGC is a problem, right? The thing that you have to understand is that, you know, authoritative identity has been the purview of the people that own the recordings who have a vested interest in that, right? So it's the labels who have to pay royalties, who have to apply all of those transactions to recoupables, and, you know, people who operate within a business sensibility. But what you have on the other side is with UGC content, some guy in his bedroom wants to upload a remix he just made, you know, to SoundCloud or his band's song. He or she is not necessarily concerned with getting all the metadata right. That's useless administrivia to most artists because they don't understand the underlying value. And, you know, what we try to do with some of our programs, like we did in Nashville and like we did at Future of Music Coalition with Kristen and Brian and Allison, is try to really educate as many emerging artists and managers as possible to what quality metadata means and how you should be getting ISRCs and how you should be, you know, enabling your uploads for better search. You know, how those fields aren't there for health, they're there to help you grow your business. And, you know, that's just the kind of thing, is either you're going to do it or you're not. And sadly, you know, if somebody can't find stuff because they searched, you know, somebody thought it was funny to put a metal band in pop and somebody's looking for metal, you just lost. You know, that's just the way that it is. And unfortunately, there's no way to enforce that on UGC sites.
What about like what Apple's going to do now? Because Apple announced Apple Music pretty recently. And one of the things that they said in the presentation, and I haven't seen exactly how this is going to work, but they made it sound like we're going to let artists upload content directly, which is great on a lot of levels. But, you know, it sounds like Apple has incredibly strict metadata conditions that the artists have to meet. So do you think that's actually going to be helpful? Do you think it's going to be confusing for artists?
I have no insight into this other than what I've seen publicly. But what I imagine is that there's going to be a fixed structure, and, you know, unless it has the complete data that it needs, it just won't go out. I mean, that's it. I mean, unless it can be validated in some way. And I would say probably that although it says that the artists will upload themselves, there's probably a component where it'll still go through standard supply chain. And it's just kind of the same way that exclusives work, where, you know, the only company that a label will deliver these, you know, exclusive tracks to will be, you know, through the standard supply chain. So, you know, I don't know the interface on that. And I don't know if I'm actually able, even if I did see it, I probably wouldn't be able to talk about it because, you know, I can't kind of get specific on members of the trade association and kind of some of the back office stuff. But, you know, from what I imagine as an individual who hasn't seen anything, you know, and somebody who knows something about supply chain, I would say that, you know, they're going to do some heavy duty requirements on people. So somebody can, nobody's going to just upload it without the required field being, you know, validated, you know, in a high level way.
So I was thinking about, you know, what are the, because it's great for us to all talk about metadata in our sort of little bubble and agree that it's important. But, you know, sort of broadening it out to the more average consumer, just trying to think of, like, what are the ways that good metadata improves their lives?
It's interesting that you said our little bubble because, you know, I think that that's probably the single most thing that I need to break, you know, in the business and break the thinking of. Metadata permeates the entire web experience. It is the life's blood of commerce. If you're in digital and your any money in your life or any experience is tied to digital, it's tied to metadata. Scale in this business is tied to metadata. Your royalties as an artist are tied to metadata. Your consumer experience is tied to this data. So getting it right, you know, from the artists in the studios through to the labels who are putting the releases out, through to the services that are making presentations of this, is critical. It's not a bubble. It's everywhere. It's just people don't acknowledge it. It's like pollution in the air. Bad metadata kind of, you know, pollutes the entire experience. And, you know, we're breathing it in and we don't even know it. So, you know, I definitely want to, you know, take this time on the bully pulpit to make sure that every artist listening, every manager listening, everybody who's there understands that, you know, if you don't think that this issue affects yours, useless administrivia, then you are going the way of the dinosaur, because this is the key to, you know, marketing and efficiency in a digital marketplace.
Yeah, and I feel like also for consumers, you know, it's the idea that, yeah, this is going to make your search easier. It's going to make the auto-generated playlists better. You're not going to get the same 50 tracks over and over that are just like someone searching with a, you know, a tag. Like, this is going to make a better consumer experience, which I imagine would probably draw more consumers into most of these services.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at that. I mean, context is key. Like, right now, I can't search, you know, one of the things that's missing from the underlying data is artist credits, right? Who played on what? Who produced what? What studio was this recorded in? You know, as a person who's looking to discover music, I will go to a site and I will say, wow, you know what I want? I'd love to know everything Mark Ronson produced. I'd love to know everything that Bob Rock ever produced. I'd love to know every song that Jimi Hendrix ever played as a sideman on. I'd love to know every track that Robert Plant ever sang vocals on. And right now, because the data is so poor, that those contextual elements of discovery don't exist in a digital ecosystem. So when metadata can replicate the experience that I had as a kid growing up and going into a record store, which was crazy guy with some Robert Smith hairdo behind the counter, who took me as a 12-year-old listening to Ronnie James Dio and heavy metal and Saxon into, you know, this brand new band called Metallica, right, into heavier stuff like Venom and Slayer, then noticing my thought processes and understanding my political sensibilities got me into punk and hardcore. Like, if metadata can do that, then it wins. And it can, as long as it's delivered, as long as people pay attention. And that's where we are in the nascent phase of recommendation. And it all has to do with people making a commitment to actually thinking that that's a viable opportunity, right? And right now, again, we're too busy slicing and dicing existing problems in the supply chain to even think about how we can grow the business for better discovery. And that's the sad part of it, is that we're still 8 years into trying to solve the artist disambiguation issue.
Yeah, and it's sort of interesting, the stuff you brought up, because it's like, how deep can you go into metadata? So, you know, I remember, again, I had the same situation being a kid in the record store, and, you know, people were like, oh, well, this is Riot Girl, this is such and such. You know, and this was not just like, oh, this is punk, it's recommended for you, but like, this is punk that will awaken your nascent, that will be like your nascent political awakening. And, you know, I don't know that you can take a Bikini Kill song and tag this, like, give it to a 14-year-old to make her, like, radical. So, like, how deep can you go with metadata in terms of not just, you know, the sort of basic stuff, but, like, like, how far down the rabbit hole can you go with this?
I mean, I don't know. Ask a company like Google, right? I mean, you know, that's how they've built a gajillion dollar business on essentially, you know, structured search and underlying metadata and RDF and being able to read context into dynamic links between websites. I mean, metadata is the lifeblood of the digital economy. So how granular can you get? I mean, yeah, I mean, there should be a way to put political, apply political sensibilities to, you know, can you apply, you know, political sensibilities to the dead Kennedy? Sure. Can you apply political sensibilities to Ted Nugent? Right.
Yeah.
You know, these are all the things that kind of, you know, and is that something that people would want to search by? Sure. Has anybody developed that as a service yet? No. And if so, if somebody develops that, who's going to be the customer to actually buy that type of service, because the DSPs are all running on slim margins? Will the labels actually adopt and apply that stuff? No. Why is it worth it for them? Their job is to deliver and market content. So, you know, when are they going to be able to take the time out of all the other fires that they're putting out to actually make an investment in that? So it's just a question of, you know, continuing to find a value proposition. And maybe the value proposition is the advertising industry, right? You know, if you can start tagging your artist brand with politics and brands and other things and associate it to a unique identifier like an ISNI, maybe that's the hub for all of these different types of experiences, which equal money, which equals investment by people that want to make money.
Right. Or like, how could you do it in a way that's like Wikipedia, where it's very user-driven? Like, one of the things that I've noticed about a lot of music services is they don't really have, there's no sense of what other users think of a song. So you can see how many times a song has been streamed, but like, you can't tell whether people streamed it and hated it, streamed it and liked it, you know, what the critics are saying. Like, there's no way to sort of put all that together. And I'm just wondering if there's maybe a way that I could tag Bikini Kill with such and such. Although I know that's, given what we've seen with Wikipedia, it's certainly open to people messing with it.
You have Music Brains, right? Music Brains is kind of the open database about music. And, you know, I didn't research it, so I don't know, but I don't know if there's any annotated fields for kind of that type of contextual information within Music Brains or Discogs, for example. And those are resources that people can tap into, but it also goes back to the feelings of authenticity. You know, there could be, and I'm not sure that this is a problem, but, you know, if the data is not authentic or supplied by the artist, do services really want to use that? Do services want to use the wisdom of the crowd in the absence of accurately supplied information? Some services may say, yeah, sure, we're a Wikified service and kind of, you know, we're using Wikipedia and we're using Discogs and we're using all this, you know, consumer supplied information with the underlying knowledge that it may not be accurate. Right. So
yeah.
That's the whole problem, is the give and take between, you know, people who have a motivation to fill out different forms and things like that. I mean, if you look at Gracenote, for example, one of the things is a significant portion of Gracenote in the early days was when you put a CD into your computer, if the CD wasn't in the Gracenote system, they would ask the user to put in the tracks. And all of a sudden that would populate, that would, you know, go back to the server and it would actually populate it. So the next time somebody else put that CD in, they would actually get that information. And then over the course of the years, Gracenote actually re-authenticated a lot of that stuff. So they were able to build a much more clear database. So Wikification is a good idea. Crowdsourcing is a great idea. But being able to establish authenticity also has its value.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely say, you know, where we are at now is not nearly where we need to be. But as someone who, I will admit, don't get mad at me, used Napster back in the day, like, I can only tell you the amount of songs that I downloaded that had the most bizarre names ever. And I still have some of them as MP3s. And every so often, one will come up and I'll just be like, oh, yeah, I downloaded that when I was in college, because it has some bizarrely misspelled name or something.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. When it doesn't come from an authoritative source, you're not sure what you get.
Yeah.
And the problem with the existing market is, even when it does come from an authoritative source, sometimes you're still not sure what you get. And that's what we're trying to remedy at the association with all the undertakings that we do, both kind of, you know, in the public and in our private work sessions.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come on and chat with us today. I know that you're just getting back from MeetM, so hopefully you're adjusting back to New York time.
Yes, my jet lag is subsiding. So, and
excellent.
It was great to be here and great to talk to you.
Cool. Well, if listeners want to find more about you or what you're working on, where can they find you?
So, Music Biz, the Music Business Association, formerly NARM, is at musicbiz.org. If you're interested in participating in any of the metadata discussions, my Twitter is BillWNYC. And the companies that I actually consult with, one is called Dubset Media, dubsetmedia.com, which is a company that is involved in monetizing mixed culture using underlying metadata. And the other company is called Quire, Q-W-I-R-E, which is actually very much involved in music sync and resolving a lot of the underlying metadata issues with cue sheets that actually lead to both payment and experiences for film and television and music. So those are the different companies, and that's how to reach me.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks.
That's all for this episode of the Music Business Podcast. Thank you to Hypebot for helping to put this show out. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, please send me an email at kyle.bylin@gmail.com. That's kyle.bylin@gmail.com.